threatened to France and the rest. You talk to sophisticated British and French, they still fairly fear the Germans. They still fear the Germans. So you run into this situation, and it does point up the fact that, that there isn't, they're not just from the Russian standpoint. Well, thank you very much for your active beyond the call of duty. That's pretty interesting. Love it. people that are out here, we did, we discussed a number of very important, for example, yesterday, we had a group of distinguished people all over the country in government, the organization. Yesterday evening, we had a group of leaders again from all over the country on our program for foreign policy that are staying. And a couple of days ago, we had a group of labor leaders, Secretary of Labor, and we had a group of leaders in business and so forth and so on. But I think that the meeting is for matters in which, as far as I personally am concerned, I have really, I have an interest in everything. After all, the president has a responsibility to all parts of the country, the business community, the labor community, the people, as I would expect. But there is no group in which I have really a deeper personal interest, a heartfelt interest in this group. Because as I look over the persons, I remember my own family, thinking of mother and father. I think, for example, of my mother's oldest sister, who's now 97 years of age. She's so sharp as a tack here that she's living in a restaurant. And I go out to see her turn aside and I think people like her. And other retired people, but they have contributed to the country, what they're going to contribute in the future. I think also the fact that as I look at great civil associations, that those who have retained some degree of respect for older citizens, the idol puts it in terms of honor that I bought with my mother, and other civilizations, particularly those in Asia, of course, the precarious and extreme. And those civilizations that are built on the bedrock of respect for family and respect for our older people as well as for those who may be young, those are the ones that are the stronger civilizations. And while you can have a temporary greatness in a society that tries to tear apart the family and respect for the elderly, in the end, I think, therefore, the interest of this country requires that we not only have programs that will provide adequacy for the housing, medical care, the income, and so forth, for those who no longer are working to retire or are no longer able to provide for themselves, but I think you also have to develop this country, an attitude among younger people and among the whole population, one respect, one that really goes beyond, well, we got all these old folks out here and we got to take care of them, it's an awful burden, but one that says, well, that the senior citizens of this country have contributed a lot to America and they still got a lot more to contribute. And we want to, and we consider it a privilege to do everything that we can in government and in non-governmental circles to make their lives meaningful to themselves and the country. That is the attitude of the Chinese Russians. I have conveyed this attitude to all of our people in government, and particularly to my very good and dear friend, Arthur Clement, who has sat around this table when I was Vice President, President Eisenhower's cabinet officers, and now who has returned for a very important assignment of having our confidence. So having with that introduction, I think I'll turn it to Arthur and then we'll turn to you for your comments, because I want to hear what you have to say today. If Arthur says that he will, I understand you talked to the group earlier, and perhaps you get us some of your views and then let's listen to them.
Mr. President, first of all, I certainly appreciate the opportunity of speaking with you and having the privilege of listening to the views of the heads of these organizations. I know you're on a tight schedule, and I do not want to take any time away from the representatives of the organization. I will call on the various representatives. They have been requested to stay within 5 minutes. I'll kind of see a time scheme this year, you know, going back to the days of the Heracles debate.
Yeah.
And I'm going to call on the various organizations in alphabetical order as far as the organizations are concerned. First of all, Mr. Fred Fasten is the president of the American Association of Retired Persons. I would like to introduce him first.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm Mr. President, member of the cabinet. In this room, decisions are affecting immediate issues, but the truly significant decisions made here are those which set policy directions that extend far into the future. So even as we define the urgent, immediate needs of older Americans as we see them, I urge that you also address them with programs that ensure future generations of older Americans the independence, dignity, and purpose which our associations believe to be their legitimate heritage. I am sure adequate income tops the priority list of the immediate needs of older citizens. For millions, Social Security is their only source, and we applaud the improvements made this year in Social Security benefits, but further improvements are needed now. Minimum monthly benefits should be no less than $120 through Social Security or some alternate means, and the earning limitation should be removed or at least raised to $3,000 a year. Cost of living increases should be an automatic feature of the program. And the long-range goal should be an adequate rather than a minimum income with benefits equal to 50% of an individual's average earning during the years immediately prior to retirement, with specified minimum and maximum benefit limits. Adequate health care is another urgent need. We've studied carefully, Mr. President, your National Health Insurance Partnership Act and the other measures now before Congress. And while we believe your measure includes many helpful provisions for younger workers, we find it lacking in coverage for older citizens. It omits any provision for cleaning up the deplorable state of national nursing home situation or for dealing with the disastrous consequences of catastrophic illness which older people frequently must confront. I realize that your measure assumes that a revised Medicare and Medicaid program will take care of the 65 and over 80 group. But these programs are deficient in their present form, and we see no evidence that proposed changes will meet adequately the specific health needs of the elderly. We like your proposal for health maintenance organizations and the freedom of choice provisions. But we believe a merger of the better provisions of your bill and those of other measures, particularly the Health Security Act, would produce legislation of greater benefit to all Americans, young and old. Housing is our third priority issue. The immediate need is for more housing in more locations at more affordable prices. Mr. President, 70% of the people over 65 own their home. And we work many years to pay for homes which we can no longer afford to maintain because of inflation and taxes. And some form of real estate tax relief is needed now. But in the larger picture, this nation should aim for a housing policy that provides for the older citizens the same option they enjoy as young people in choosing the place and design of their living quarters. Transportation is another priority concern. Loss of mobility is not only an economic hardship for older citizens. It also compounds the psychological problems of age through forced isolation. Several bills, of course, are being considered to provide discounts for older people on public transportation systems. And discounts will solve an immediate problem for some. But the larger goal should be to make transportation available to all citizens where they need it, when they need it, at prices they can pay. And designers of transportation, for example, need to take into account old folks like me with a bum hip who have difficulty in negotiating the high steps to board a bus or a plane. Our list of priorities is much longer, Mr. President, includes such issues as pensions, meaningful use of increased leisure time, research into the psychological aspects of aging and employment. But time is not permitted for the discussion, but I would like to leave some additional information for your consideration. May I conclude, Mr. President, with a request that you seriously consider reestablishment of a body like the former President's Council on Aging and charge it with the responsibility of identifying and removing the barriers that stand in the way of achieving the goals I have outlined. Conferences and task forces have defined these needs for decades, but still they exist, and no master plan has emerged that offers hope of their early or distant resolutions. And we are delighted with your appointment of Dr. Fleming as the full-time chairman of the 1971 White House Conference on Aging, and with Secretary Richardson's designation of Dr. Fleming to head a special task force to study the organization and the status of AOA. From the study of the conference, we'll likely, which will come, will be more helpful recommendations. We believe the President's Council is needed to assure and facilitate the implementation of these recommendations. And this would be in addition to upgrading the administration on aging with its responsibilities for programs under the Older American Act. We trust that our staff will be invited to participate on the task force. And if you want to become a personnel man, I'd be happy to participate.
Thank you very much. President, I think it's really very much to some of the major issues and very concise statement. So maybe some of the members of your cabinet may want to react to some of these meetings, but I suggest that we
go over the
all. Get all the presentation with that chance.
Let me say that first with regard to, we realize that 5 minutes is very hard to present anything. But you touched the highlights, and you, if you will, all of you prepare any papers that you want and get them in to us. And then through Dr. Fleming's exam, of course, I'll get the just a nice call, and we'll bring all of the cabinet members in this consideration as well. So I think just the way you presented that's very effective, but you can be assured that your supplemental material will also receive consideration. I want you to know that, because I don't want to do this case in this room, and in 5 minutes, and say you're in the end, and say you can't do it. You probably can't do it 5 hours.
I know. You don't have money.
That's right.
Present to you.
All right, turn next to the National Association of Retired Federal Employees. That's Mr. Tom Walters.
Mr. President, on behalf of our organization, I'm delighted to be present and to have with me Mr. Ashby Smith, who's on our staff working largely on this particular topic. First of all, during the month of April and May, most of our state federation conventions have held their annual convention. And to my great satisfaction, practically all have passed resolutions endorsing and recommending the program that you are attempting to put forth to the Congress and to the country. And our people are behind you almost 100%. As far as I know, these resolutions have all been adopted unanimously. I have attended several of the state federation conventions myself, and it's a general comment throughout the country that you're trying to offer the leadership that's needed to do something real for these senior citizens of the United States. And by letter, I attempted to try to tell you how much I appreciated the appointment of Dr. Fleming, having known and worked with Dr. Fleming for more years than he and I would like to discuss. I don't think you could have found a better qualified and better suitable man for this appointment, and I certainly congratulate you on that appointment. Now, I agree with the previous speaker that many of the things that now are perhaps centering their attention more directly on health and medical coverage of one kind or another that's especially adapted to people of our ages that come into this group. As you know, our members are all retirees of the federal government, and that makes them be in the category from about 60 to 100 plus. We have members who attended conventions this year that were over 100 years old. And those are the people who are really suffering, the people who retired 20 or 25 years ago, because most of those people have no other income whatsoever except what little they get from the federal government. And more than half of all the retirees of the federal government are receiving annuities less than the poverty level, which most folks just cannot believe, but that's according to the civil service's own figures. And with the other memorandum that we are filing, we've attached a breakdown of these people who are in the categories of the low income. And another thing that we've done recently, Mr. President, we put a notice in our official organ for everybody who has 15 or more years of service and who are getting less than $350 a month annuity to write up. We have received today over 8,000 letters, and many of these letters are from survivors who are getting $106 and $108 and $112 a month. I just saw a letter yesterday from a lady that her husband was 36 years a railway mail clerk. She's got $108 a month and 92 years of age. So, and the fourth-class postmasters over this country, there's literally thousands of them, Mr. President, getting less than $100 a month because their salaries back on this fourth-class postmasters is very low. So we are so encouraged that you're offering this great leadership, and I believe with your appointment of Dr. Fleming and the cooperation of this group and others, we're going to see some real progress made to make the last year of these people a little happier and a little more content. And I was delighted that you brought in your own parents and especially your aunt still living at 91. Now,
she drove a car when she was 88.
No, my music lesson and still living. She's still and still tends to be out at 81. So. The number one item, of course, with our people and all over people is more money. If they had enough money, they could get some of these other things. The second most important thing to our people is hospital and medical care. And they feel that most of the programs, like Medicare and others, are not tailored to old folks. Now, our old people like chiropractors and they like prescription drugs and they want more nursing home. They don't want to go to the hospital. Most people think when they go to the hospital, they go in there for the undertaker. But anyway, those are some of the main things, and with your permission, I will file a more detailed statement. And we, too, in our organization, will be happy to do anything we can to cooperate with you and your staff. And Mr. Smith will be at your disposal to work any way he can to help further this program. Thank you very kindly.
Arthur Fleming just pointed out as far as federal employees are concerned, I mean, the people you're talking about, very few of them, of course, are on Social Security.
I try the opportunity to go. Especially these old people.
You don't get them that beautiful. What I mean here, because you said the folks that are retired 25 years or 10 or even 20 or 15, they don't even get the benefit of these, as you know, in the last 10 years or so. Those who retire, who enter federal service now and then retire, get pretty good deal. But the problem is those that entered years ago before we had the new
president emeritus of the National Council on Aging, but who also, as you know, served as chairman of the White House Task Force on Aging.
President, I appreciate this opportunity to discuss with you the further involvement of your administration in the welfare of 20 million older Americans. And this is really very, very much quite good.
What do you say? Who are you?
65, 65.
I think they're more than that.
Possibly, Mr. Fink generally uses around 22 million now, I think.
20 million over 65, but about 50 million over 50.
About 26 million over 60, I think. So it depends where you draw the line.
All right.
Your Social Security is under 65, and you're pretty generous, Mr. President. I have here some specific recommendations, some of which are covered in the task force report, the President's task force report on the agents that I have here. I'm not going to give you a laundry list of the many needs of the elderly, but rather I would like to outline to you the consideration of a basic need of our nation as it relates to the elderly. This basic need is a national policy, the development of a national policy, a philosophical approach, if you will, which will identify society's commitment to the older Americans of this nation. Once having established this national policy, projected possibly for the next decade, we can then establish specific programs, always, however, within the framework of this philosophical national policy. As we examine historically the legislative action relating to the elderly over the past number of years, we find that it consists of a patchwork of programs motivated either by a crisis situation or by massive clamoring, or by political expediency, and generally by all three. The unfortunate thing about this kind of legislation is that it is generally based on programs which were devised under a cloud of a crisis situation. Yet the social and economic conditions since these programs became effective have changed drastically. Let us examine, Mr. President, two major programs relating to the elderly to see the validity of this statement. Social Security was conceived during an economic depression with its great unemployment. Among the reasons for the establishment of Social Security, and this is only one of them, was a genuine need to encourage retirement of the elderly in the hope that it would open up jobs for the younger persons. Certainly a commendable objective. Yet the basis for Social Security benefits were conceived in a period of great economic depression. And we have been developing, again in patchwork manner, legislation in trying to catch up with the needs of the elderly in an entirely different social and economic structure which we experience today, quite different than it was when Social Security was enacted. The other example is Medicare. Again, born out of a great and pressing need, were designed in an atmosphere of tremendous pressures from many antagonistic camps. The result is an ill-conceived program developed through compromise in order to get something on the books. And we were all agreeable to that at the time.
Because it was better than what you had.
That's right. It was better than nothing, actually. And the feeling was that once you get your foot in the door, you might be able to sell some fuller brushes. But the big thought was to get something on the books. But in doing this, if you will recall, we had to make some tremendous compromises, and we are now today building on this compromise kind of program. No one questions the great need of medical or better health insurance for the elderly. But let the whole program be conceived in a calm atmosphere with study and depth, and a program developed that can grow from a well-conceived basic design. Once a basic national policy is established, it must be acceptable and really accepted by the middle-aged members of our society, for it is this group that's going to carry the burden of the cost of any of these programs. Therefore, the national policy that, about which I am now speaking to you, sir, must be of such a nature that it can be palatable to the nation as a whole. With a policy accepted, we can then proceed to legislate specific programs, some of which have already been mentioned, some of which I covered here. But before we do this, we must have a basic policy, and then within this framework will come legislation, always recognizing that it is following the basic philosophical policy that has been established and accepted. But while this national policy is being developed, we have to be realistic. There are a great number of needs that have to be met today. The elderly are, their future is today and the immediate tomorrow, and therefore many of the immediate needs, such as increasing social security, such as housing, such as transportation, all of which are so important to the well-being of the individual, these must be met today, even though there may be, again, crisis-developed legislation. But we do face a crisis that is critical. We must meet these needs of the elderly, even though they may be on a temporary basis, because when we develop a national policy, and we develop a sound Social Security program, and we develop a sound Medicare program, and a sound housing program, we can then modify these temporary measures to fit in with the basic program. This is my presentation to you this morning, sir, and again, as I say, we do have some specific recommendations that I will leave with Dr. Fleming. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Because of our past association, you've heard of Ohio Wesleyan. I'm now happy to introduce a graduate of Ohio Wesleyan who is just a little bit older than I am. He is the president of the National Council of Senior Citizens.
Thank you, Mr. President, cabinet members, distinguished associates of the administration. We are glad to have the opportunity to come and present to you our views of our organization, which is a federation of clubs and councils, which total in membership about 3 million people. Let me say, Mr. President, I also am particularly pleased that Dr. Fleming has been put in the position he has to deal with the problems as we grow older. I think I probably have the privilege of knowing Arthur longer than anybody in this room, probably, since we were in school together in the late 20s.
I'm doing very well. He's got more hair than I have.
Well, we have prepared, Mr. President, a letter addressed to you in which we treat at some length some of the problems as we see them and some of the recommendations, and we have copies for the members of the cabinet and your other associates here, because we know of your limitations of time, and dividing the resolutions groups into the groups identical with the subject matters of the White House Conference on Aging, so that will be a mechanism for getting from the grassroots our membership, the recommendations under the categories that have been set out. Now, in our proposals and in our statement, we outline six major areas of need. We could have named 60, but there are six major areas of need, some of which have been touched on by my associates and friends from other organizations. With most of those, we are in agreement. We are in some disagreement on some points with others, but certainly not in long-term objectives. The matter of income has come out in everyone's presentation, as I'm sure you would expect. The poor among the elderly are increasing. There are now 4,800,000 people, older people, who are living under the poverty level. We point out that it is the only segment of the population where the absolute number of those living under the population is increasing. That was increasing up to 1969. Now, the improvements, the 15% improvement in Social Security in 1969 and the 10% improvement in 1971 have probably stopped that growth in the number and the poverty peculiarly difficult situation. Now, we have to point out, I'm afraid with some bluntness, Mr. President, we were disappointed that the 15% increase in Social Security in 69 and the 10% increase in 71 both had to be passed under the threat of your veto. That they had to be tied to bills, in one case the tax improvement program, and in the second case just a few months ago, the debt limit ceiling bill, in order to meet this. So that we were disappointed in the lack of support for these improvements. We're concerned again just this week that the vote in the House Ways and Means Committee for the general overall improvement bill, most of which we support, and we're glad to note that you have supported in the main, and I heard Secretary Richardson yesterday at the press club state his support for that major measure, and we certainly welcome that. But on the Ways and Means Committee, every member of your party voted against, including a 7% increase in Social Security on this. And we don't think, you know, there were some others, of course, also on the other side of the aisle, three, who made the majority of one turning down this improvement. And we believe that some urging from the White House would perhaps be sending us one more change of vote that would have gotten an increase in Social Security again, much needed. In the health, we point out that Medicare has been a boon. I certainly share with my friend Darcy Meyer some of his criticisms of the shortcomings of Medicare, but I think it is a stage we had to go through, Mr. President. It has shown, I think, that we can't rely on the insurance mechanism, either public or private, without some control on costs. And in this way, we support the view of the Retired Teachers Association here and others, that there are many improvements suggested in your health partnership proposal. One major shortcoming, in our view, is the reliance on private insurance mechanism. When that is pointed to as the one of the strengths of our existing system that we have to maintain, our experience has been that it's the weakest part of the health system. The commercial insurance industry's participation in health insurance is the corrosive element in all health insurance. And any reliance on that, we would believe, will defeat its major purposes. In housing, we were sorry to see the demise of Section 202 of the Housing Act. It had great promise, is now phasing out. We note also that there is no longer, as there was at one time, the Assistant Secretary for Senior Housing in HUD. In the field of employment and needful employment, we do disagree with some of our colleagues on the desirability of removing the retirement test from Social Security. We've made a very careful study of that, and we find that that would be a very costly measure, and it would improve the lot of only 10% of the people over 65, and that 10% would be the people who need it least, those who are able to continue work because of their physical condition and for whom there are jobs available in a tight labor market. The need for employment is for meaningful employment outside as a competitive labor market for older people. We feel that there is so much that they can do in terms of wisdom and experience, but not to keep pace with the heavy demands of the competitive labor market. And we feel that there is so much of value, even though it doesn't have a price in the labor market. In our senior age program, which is conducted under grants from the Department of Labor, we have shown in some 26 the enormously valuable contribution that some of these people can make. Transportation is a very serious problem, and on the solution of this problem, so much else depends. Consumer and legal protection is one which is a very serious requirement of our people. Elderly, they are often easy targets of sharp practice. We would like to see the organization for leadership in this area improve, Mr. President. The 20 million elderly, soon to become 25 million, have such special problems that they should have a fulcrum of advocacy at the highest level of government. the Administration on Aging has never had a status nor power under your administration or that of your predecessors, which we feel that the situation requires. And now we know that the policy seems further to downgrade the AOA. We observe with dismay the cuts in funds for the budget for the AOA. We know that the foster grandparents program is now proposed in reorganization plan number one to be shunted into a new catch-all organization for volunteers. Well, this is not really a volunteer program. These are people meeting a need who really need the money that they're earning under these. All of these moves that have been taken and are contemplated to leave the AOA, which was established by unanimous vote of both houses of Congress, a mere skeleton of an organization. Mr. President, if from what I have said, you surmise that our membership is not completely happy, you're exactly right. But we came here at your invitation, assuming, and I'm sure we're correct, that you wanted us, to borrow a phrase from our younger contemporaries, to tell it like it is. And we appreciate the opportunity to be this frank, and we ask that if we have been at some times even blunt, that no disrespect for you or your very high office. We want to present to you the urgent, deeply felt needs of our people and the recommendations which they make, and the high hope that they can be carried out. Thank you.
Well, I think that's a very good statement. Let me say that without responding on several of the matters, I think two or three points should be made, that with regard to the private insurance companies involved, Elliot Richardson just pointed out to me that we are quite cognizant of that problem. He's got a very good deal, and everybody goes in there and tells him, even. And that's why we're going to have a proposal in July. Maybe you covered briefly the insurance companies and the health field.
Well, very briefly, Mr. President.
On the point of the problems inherent in reliance on the insurance industry, specifically private insurance, we recognize that if we are to place specific confidence in its capacity to meet needs of people, the corollary that must be that we create for the first time a regulatory mechanism that assures people they must make their money worth. Exactly.
Right.
We don't need to go into detail into this, but we did, as President did declare in the submission of his health program, that legislation to do this would be developed, and it is under development now for submission to Congress in July. So what we are hoping to do here is what we have done in so many other areas in the United States, is to preserve an appropriate public-private mix, relying upon private institutions subject to regulations designed to assure that they genuinely do meet and define public interest.
Another point that I should make, too, with regard to the Social Security increases, as you know, there are a number of problems here, budgetary and the rest, but I would not want any of you to overlook the fact that the one recommendation that is really new in this field that the Congress has reviewed and acted on, that I think is very much in the interest of everybody, is for the automatic escalator. Now, the difficulty in Social Security, as you know, all of you know, is that it's like so many other ways that the money, it's a catch-up deal. You're 15%, you're 10%, the rest is catching up with increases in the cost of living. Now, we feel that we can eventually get the provision that I advocated for the end of 68, so automatic increase. Then, when you consider Social Security, it would be a question of really providing a real increase rather than simply a catch-up to meet the cost of living. It seems to me that as far as those that are on Social Security, there should be, that if there is an increase in the cost of living, that those on Social Security should, just like those, many of them, as you know, many labor contracts now provide automatic increases at the moment, that is when the CPI comes out. While this provision I has not had, I don't think
it is in nature.
Yeah, but I mean, it is in the law. That's my point. It's in the nature of it is in the law. But I would urge strongly that all of you here should realize that that is, in our view, enormously important. Because it then provides the base so that when we, in the future years, after I'm long gone from here, that the presidents consider this matter, the question is not simply, well, now, what are we going to do for the older people in terms of catching up with the rise in the cost of living? That will be automatic. Then the question will be, what can we do to see that from that base we can do more? Which I think is puts the issue much more clear.
Well, Mr. President, I'm very happy to see you put it that way. That's exactly the way we could.
We're not substituting the automatic escalator for any increases in Social Security, because as time goes on, as the nation gets wealthier, as it will, as we produce more goods, as it will, it means that the whole level should come up. Right. And that we should not just say, well, now all the people are going to get on Social Security. It's the same amount. Putting it this way, any productivity in this country, the Secretary of Labor will agree, it's now sharply up in the first quarter. It will be up when you balance this year, it'll be up next year. But over the next 10 years, it's going to go up. Now, where does the increase in productivity go? Well, and even the most sophisticated, even the most hardline labor leader, like a George Mason, I mean, he says, I don't want it all. He says, we don't expect to get all of it, but we want part of it. And some of it has to go, of course, to profit so that the companies can continue to plow things back into new enterprise, new business, and so forth. And another part of the increase in productivity could go to the older citizens, to those who are unable to care for themselves, and so forth. Everybody should have a share of the pie. And as America becomes more wealthy, it means that the standard of living of all Americans should move up. This is fairly apart from the very different question, which most of you have been concerned by. It's just simply, gee, we've got to have an increase in Social Security to catch up with the cost of living, you see. And that's what we're trying to get at here.
I'm delighted to hear you put it just that way. Our only reservation about supporting the escalating provision in HR 1 was that it could be considered by some a substitute. Well, yes, that's right.
So we don't prepare how close to
that. We want to see that increase applied to a higher base, right, so that when we have a decent base to apply it to, we can almost get in there. Thank you.
Well, President, I'd like to.
I'm sorry, right.
Starting on time here, I would like to present Mrs. Catherine Pierce, who is president of the National Retired Teachers Association. I think we always have to have one lady here, you know, what the women's lib wouldn't like at all.
Mr. President, members of the cabinet, colleagues, I do represent the retired teachers of America. I'd like to give you more about half a minute, a little background history. This all began one October afternoon at the kitchen table, around the kitchen table, a very staunch American citizen and a very great teacher in Los Angeles. The needs, if any of you are old enough to think back to 1947, at that time were so great that action had to be taken. And this was a courageous group. Five people with $30 began the National Retired Teachers Association.
In Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles. And Dr. Ethelbert C. Andrews, who was at that time principal, are retired from the principalship of the for the next 8 years, their efforts, of course, were to meet the immediate. They did turn to those things available to them. And in 8 or 10 years, they had succeeded to such an extent that the members were clamoring for an extension of these privileges to members of their families, their fathers and mothers and brothers who weren't eligible. They had never taught in any of the nation's schools. So the American Association of Retired Persons came into existence. And as you see, these people had large families. They had many cousins and brothers and sisters. And so now there is a possibility that maybe the parents can become a sort of we will celebrate our silver anniversary next year. If any of you have ever taught in any of the major schools, I'd be happy to take your motion at the conclusion of this meeting. Now, I am not a technician. Any contribution that I might make would come from the experience of my years of living. As I left the 60s, I was not too aware of that downward trend that the gerontologists tell us to expect. But as I leave the 70s, I'm well aware of the extra effort that it takes to overcome that ever-increasing downward trend. It is a fact that we have a very healthy condition among a large percentage of our older Americans. It has been my privilege for the past 6 years to visit with our organizations in the 50 states. And in addition to that, we have some 1,500 local community groups. I would like to say to you that I see the segment of older Americans in two groups. The smaller group, who are definitely beyond the point of self-help. And I want to see all of these sources that have proven themselves successful continued and expanded in need be as this group expands. Because their care is our responsibility, as you well know. Now for the larger proportion of this segment of older Americans, many of them are just as independent as they are doing for themselves and are to be congratulated. There is a proportion of these people whose income has been added, but is now being strained because of inflation. So, Mr. President, if anything could be done to extend the buying power of the dollar, it would be very helpful. Now, to future generations, to keep this situation from recurring, I think education is the answer to our problem. And I think that it is our responsibility to see that the necessary type of education is given. I think it is the responsibility of business and industry to see that education for retirement, I think it is the responsibility of the educational system to see that education is the answer so that this transition, which is actually just a normal part of the life cycle, should not be feared, should not be dreaded, but we should be prepared for. So if I can leave with you one thought, it would be my feeling of urgency that we do have a well-established department to which we can come, we can go for these necessary aids. One that we're not afraid of, that is, that we're not afraid will not be permanently. And then the realization of the necessity, the need for education for the future.
Thank you very much. President, you're sad, but to me that we should write it. go to 11. I'll accept your decision.
Well, I wanted to have the opportunity to say a couple of things before we go. The group I do, Rose Garden, right, I remember it's rather interesting. You're all welcome. It's a naturalist's office. It's a variety of different groups. But use the Rose Garden out here. Now it's tulips in it. But the rose is in the summer. That's where the wedding's going to be held. That's going to be a real tough thing. But nevertheless, it doesn't rain. At the Rubai meeting is a very group of volunteers for an aid. There was many of us in America forget. Long before we had a foreign aid program, we had churches sometimes. I remember going to Sunday school from the University of Michigan. They have a lot of programs. We had churches, we got the Red Cross, we got all, a lot of wonderful organizations that have helped people all over the world. You know, we contribute to the relief of famine. And this Rose Garden will be 150 organizations in America, proud organizations that have been working for years abroad. And we're just trying to recognize and show that America does a lot of things that we don't do as a government. Before going out there, I want to say a couple of things here. One, we don't expect, and I appreciate that you can, we don't expect you to come in here and just say things that we may have already agreed with. I mean, the purpose of this social media is to find areas where you think we have, you should make changes in the areas where we are already moving, where you think, where we have your support. So we'll have this kind of, glad to get this presentation on your part. One thing that impressed me about the meeting is the way that all of you have presented the case so succinctly and effectively. Also, the broad range that your problems cover. Naturally, income comes at the top, because with income you can do everything else. But also, the fact that it isn't just a question for Social Security or retirement for us. It does involve, as we see from this side of the table, practically the whole domestic side of this government. Look at the cabinet offices. Here's the Secretary of Health, Education, Welfare. He's got a big part of it. Here's over on the other side of him, it's Mr. George Schultz, who's the Director of the Budget. And actually, he has a lot to say from what goes on here. Then on my right is the Secretary of Labor. Well, you think the Secretary of Labor just worked with labor unions? He doesn't. He just worked with the whole, this whole business of the point that the one of you made that was, I thought, it particularly effective, and I don't know what the answer that you made it, Mr. Schenck, the retirement, whether you should have people should retire and then, at an earlier time or a later time or whatever the case might be, but what kind of work basically the older people should do, the fact that rather than staying on the job, that maybe it's better to have a situation where job opportunities, especially tailored to those who, in the older community, that those we should explore. I think the Secretary of Labor has this very much in mind, but it was good to have him presented. And the next we have is Undersecretary for HUD. Well, housing, of course, is an enormously important activity for you. He's here, Mr. Van Dusen, and he will, of course, work very closely with Governor Romney on that. Now, transportation. I, frankly, before this meeting, wouldn't have thought that transportation was something that was very important. I understand that I mentioned my aunt, but I remember how she needed to give up that driver's license. she shouldn't, as a matter of fact, I don't drive a car anymore. I don't have much practice in driving around. You drive on the highway at 80 miles an hour, California freeway, you're going to get light on your hand. But here's the thing that I think Secretary Volpe will be a real advocate for. He's mentioned this probably never. First, the need is for public transportation. In this case, you've got a lot of your older people cannot continue to drive these, frankly, weapons of destruction, which an automobile can be, certainly in the hands of a younger one, let alone an older one. As far as automobiles are concerned, also we've got to think of ways, and individual to go downtown. I mean, he can drive up, but it isn't too far away.
But he's in control of his own machine.
Yeah, I don't know whether this can be done or not. A cushion golf cart now runs around $1,100. That's too much. You can get it down to $500-$600. Perhaps in some of the places where people live, retired places, St. Petersburg and the rest.
That's Long Beach.
Long Beach, right. Now, but beyond that, looking at public transportation, things that you mentioned about the size of the step.
Well, that's something I wouldn't have thought about.
We have a Tulsi bus, Mr. President, that will be coming out next year. General Motors is showing me the advanced model of the Tulsi bus that will tilt right down the sidewalk.
Well, in other words, the steps will go right down, so it's kind of
the bus will tilt right down to the sidewalk.
All of us.
The whole bus will
tilt. And you have a ramp.
And they have a ramp so that the wheelchairs and so forth can be adopted. With the Washington Metropolitan Transit Authority,
yeah, we're working
on a very designed elevated rather than escalator to get the people down. All sorts of things will be very helpful.
The elevator, of course, because you can actually count if you're in a wheelchair and so forth. But just don't think of the people in the wheelchair. I think a lot, I'm sure you don't. We actually think of that, but there are a lot of people that aren't in wheelchairs that still have the problem you mentioned. It's a big step.
Yeah.
So let's make it about a half step, right? I could use the half step. Well, anyway, I see my retired people. No, my volunteers are out here. They're out there. They'll quit volunteering. We'd like to leave with you the thought that this whole cabinet has hurt you. And Arthur Fleming and John Martin, our others, will be working closely with you. Say how you like it is, I want to work with you. Arthur can always get to talk to any time on these problems because he's able to do it. He's won the Capitol Digital Working Series for those three efforts. Second point that I have a little personal, we always, people who come to meetings of this sort, we call and we invite you in. We always want that you take something away. Incidentally, many of you have this problem, I suppose. You don't have to report this, we'll give them your income tax. I don't report it either. It looks more expensive than it is, but it's a rather nice thing. It's the presidential seal for a company.
Oh,
that's for all the men. But we make something special for the ladies. Listen, they say, no, they're not going to wear cufflinks. So this is the presidential pin. This is the seal with the pin. And I know this is a group that's bipartisan. It's just meeting bipartisan. So just to be sure that all of you can wear it, doesn't have my name on it. So, Mr. Bull will see that each of you gets one of these. You'll have a little medal with me. More important, we hope that as the time goes on, if you look at the seals, you can always feel that you have here in the White House, in my rooms, it's concerned about your problems. We really care about them. We can't always do as much as we would like to because we have some restraint, you know. But much of your arrest, so much of the extent that we can, then we're not going to forget you. But you just keep your ideas coming in. We want to cooperate. We think you deserve an important service.